Hey everyone, thanks for joining us on The Week in Review. I'm Amanda Vinicky. Hospitals shutting their doors, tens of thousands of patients potentially losing access to doctors, therapists, and medicine. Some of the devastating impacts doctors and Democrats warn are coming if the federal government whacks Medicaid.
The doors at our facility, just up the street, and the doors where we're standing right now do not remain open without Medicaid.
Meanwhile, Illinois says despite a court order to keep money flowing, it's missing nearly $2 billion promised by the feds.
They love the chaos because it leaves all of us out here not knowing whether we can even continue a program, and they're hoping that we'll just decide to shut things down for fear of not getting paid.
A new world order? 3 years after Russia instigated a war, President Trump disparages the president of Ukraine.
Beginning of the war.
You're not
Mr.
in a good
Graham.
Position. You don't have the cards right now. With us, you start having
not cards.
Card.
A Republican-led congressional committee prepares to grill Mayor Brandon Johnson over the city's immigration policy.
Fails to protect our magnificent law-abiding American citizens.
Chicago passes an $830 million bond deal to pay for infrastructure upgrades. Over protests, it'll cost residents a whole lot more.
When we have all the bond rating agencies, all the financial experts, all the financial people telling us this is a bad deal, and for us to sit here and ignore that, again, is another problem.
This is not about running for mayor. This is about the people of the city of Chicago. Folks don't care about all this shenanigans that goes on down here. The only thing people care about is what you can do for them in their community. They care about their streets being paved.
A near miss at Midway Airport. Fulton's embattled mayor loses a primary and slow down or get a ticket. Chicago's getting more speed cameras.
And joining us for our Week in Review panel are Quinn Myers from Block Club Chicago, Shruti Singh from Bloomberg News, Violet Miller from the Chicago Sun-Times, and Sarah Freistadt from the Chicago Tribune. Now let's get to it. Shruti, nearly one in four Illinois residents rely on Medicaid. That is the federal and state joint program for people who are either disabled or disadvantaged and economically. We heard from Democrats and from doctors about what could happen if the budget resolution that passed the U.S. House becomes reality. Are these true threats, or is this just more partisanship?
It's really hard to tell in terms of what's going to happen. One of the things that Governor Pritzker has been saying for weeks now, even before the inauguration, is that he is worried the unpredictable nature of the Trump administration could be a hit on the state budget, as well as items such as Medicaid, which is a big one for the state. One of the things that the state looks at is how much reimbursement it gets from the federal government. For every dollar that the state spends, it gets roughly about 50 cents back from the federal government, which is nothing to sneeze at. So this is something that state officials are looking at closely. The governor was in the city talking today about how devastating the impacts could be. We have to see what's going to happen in terms of the negotiations in D.C.
Well, and we're talking about impacts in terms of both care for individuals and then also, Quinn, there was talk of hospitals closing, layoffs there.
Especially in more rural parts of the state, you know, that don't have the same economic resources as Chicago. And I think, you know, the state says the state cannot make up what the federal government is providing here. I mean, that's what they're
Illinois
saying.
Illinois isn't going to be
Illinois
the savior.
Illinois is not going to be the savior. I mean, there are contingency plans. The governor would talk today about contingency plans, but what those are not totally yet clear. And so I think this is a huge threat to Illinois and to residents. And, you know, we've kind of been distracted by some of the, you know, higher profile things going on in D.C. with Elon Musk and Doge. But this is really a big deal and could really impact Illinois.
Sure. Do you want to?
Yeah. Medicaid is one of the biggest line items for Illinois as well as other states. So the governor has said Illinois, first of all, can't make up for the billions it could potentially lose if there are changes made to Medicaid eligibility or the actual funding. But he's also pointed out that it's not just Illinois, but it's any state in the country would not be able to backfill if the cuts were made.
So this is something that we'll be watching because it may not be politically feasible. Republicans might like tax cuts, but when their residents start to hear what is going to happen, there may be a political backlash. Something that we are already seeing, Violet, is that the president's executive order that threatens to strip funding from hospitals and research institutions that perform gender-affirming care for those 19 and under, that has already had an impact in Illinois. How so?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've been speaking to families that have had surgeries canceled, appointments canceled, mostly at Lurie Children's Hospital, which has put a pause on surgeries, but also Northwestern and UI Health, which are alleged to have put a pause on surgeries. The verdict is still out because they haven't given statements. So now we're seeing that impact in, you know, these young adults, mostly 17 to 19, who are having these surgeries canceled. And if we look at the data, I mean, the Trevor Project did a study last year that showed that 40% of LGBTQ plus kids had considered suicide in the last year. And that number gets a lot closer to 50% when you look at specifically trans kids. Now, again, this data is from last year, before any of this was in order, and we're just seeing the states, 26 states currently restricting gender-affirming care for youth. And so, you know, we're starting to see that on the national level now.
And I know the governor asked about this and said, hey, don't blame the hospitals, blame the Trump administration. Illinois is among the states that are going to court. Can you give us any sort of status update in terms of, is it just legal avenues, or you've also been in contact with Illinois lawmakers that are looking to take action?
Yeah, for sure. And so Attorney General Kwame Raoul has said that he would defend gender-affirming care, and Illinois law already protects it. We are one of 14 states, plus Washington, D.C., that currently have SHIELD laws for gender-affirming care, which means that our legal system protects patients and providers within Illinois from outside legal inquiry. So theoretically, this could pitch Illinois against the federal government if they started to come after patients or providers in Illinois.
That sort of fight that we're seeing play out as well is Illinois schools decide how they're going to deal with some of the state mandates for teaching, and even against the executive order that seeks to strike diversity, equity, and inclusion from schools that are funded by the federal government, a.k.a. all schools. Shruti, before we move on from this, Illinois did take on some health care costs that are not covered by the federal government, and that is, of course, starting in 2022 with a program that provided Medicaid-like coverage to undocumented immigrants. A new audit shows that instead of costing about $4 million in its first year, it was like $67 million and a total of $1.6 billion overall. What does this mean, and how does that fit into the overall budget picture as Illinois is supposed to be seeing leaner times?
This is going to be a tough budget season. That is something that the administration has said. And certainly healthcare costs have been one of the largest increases that they've seen over the last couple of years. That's not changing anytime soon. We've all heard about the continuous increase in healthcare costs. And now with this new wild card with negotiations in D.C., we have to see what the full impact is going to be on the budget as the negotiations here in the state start between the governor and the legislature.
And Republicans at the State House have been very keen on saying that Illinois is prioritizing undocumented residents over longtime residents who have their needs. Does this play into that argument, or do we think Democrats are going to stand pat? They have stood by these programs in the past. They have control of state government. They're not worried about it.
I think that what I've heard when we were in Springfield, you and I were just in Springfield a couple of weeks ago covering the budget proposal, and everyone is very tight-lipped about what they are willing to give in and what they're not willing to give in for, because it's just such a tight budget. There's a small surplus, but now with these changes that could come, nobody really knows. And so they don't know what of their priorities they may have to give up. So I think you probably found, too, that everyone is pretty tight-lipped.
Very tight-lipped, but I don't know. Other than at press conferences, then they can have a lot to say, but maybe not the answers that we're searching for. Let's move on to the city's bond deal. The city council narrowly approving a plan that allows the city to take out really an $830 million bond deal to pay for infrastructure upgrades. Now, there was, however, a lot of contentious debate. Why are nearly, not quite there, half of aldermen so against this?
Well, I think two main reasons. I think there is legitimate concern about borrowing that, you know, $830 million that could cost taxpayers $2 billion when it is paid back in the 2050s, I believe. So there are some legitimate fiscal concerns. But also, I do think this is a political thing that is happening. These are aldermen who are trying to score points against a mayor they perceive as weak, a mayor that they perceive has kind of lost the control of the city council, Brandon Johnson. So I do think that people like Alderman Bill Conway and other aldermen were really trying to score some points with this. I'm not sure if they did. We'll see. It did very narrowly pass, 26-23. One alderman took a walk to not vote on that. But that followed a quick parliamentary maneuver that saw a tie to try to delay this a few months. And then Mayor Brandon Johnson had to basically break that tie to allow this vote to go forward. I think that this is at least his third tie that he's broken in his office. I don't know of any other Chicago mayor who has had to do that in recent memory, even under Mayor Lori Lightfoot, who had some, fraucous independent voices on the council. We didn't see that happen very often.
Well, so this is supposed to pay for what exactly, Sarah? We heard from Alderman Brunette saying that this is what residents care about. Do you believe that to be true? Is it residents that just care about their streets, or are they eyeing the finances?
Right, so that's the big question, right? This is supposed to go towards streets and bridges and lighting and all of these kind of fairly mundane, but, right, they keep the city working. and that's been, in a lot of the rhetoric, right? On the one hand, you have aldermen who say, this is something that has to happen. You have Alderman Brunette saying this has to happen right now. People need this right now. But then also, like, sure, these payments are going to be pushed out a lot of years, but people in those future years when we're paying this back, they're going to be benefiting from this. That's one argument. On the other hand, you have the people saying that, right, the decision not to pay back any principal until for two decades is really just kicking the can down the road. So I think that's kind of the two sides of this coin here.
That it's super backloaded. When we have a mayor who, this is sort of a jump ball here, you have a mayor who is perceived to be weak, to have this contentious relationship with so many members of the city council. He's still getting his way. So is he really weak?
It was a very close vote. And I want to point out that this isn't the first debt argument or debate we've had recently. There was a refinancing that just occurred a few months ago during the budget negotiations that where the savings were supposed to be applied to the budget. That also was contentious. This was a second bond deal within the last few months. And I've been covering this bond deal since it was introduced in January. It was the day after S&P downgraded the city's credit rating. So that was something that caught people's attention because of concerns related to the structural deficit that the city is carrying and the contentious budget negotiations that have been afoot and could be coming up in the next year as well. So the timing of it, as well as the tensions that built up during the budget, have fed into two consecutive bond deals that have been questioned by aldermen.
And I will say, I do feel like the mayor here, he doesn't really have the standing to push forward his agenda that he ran on. He's kind of just putting out fires in many ways. And so he's, doing things, scraping by on votes like this, but he's not exactly pushing forward that big, bold, progressive agenda that he ran on, that he told Chicagoans that he was going to enact.
They tried, but there's been some challenges in terms of getting acceptance of those progressive revenues. And that's a challenge for a mayor who wants to do multiple things, whether it's for schools or for the most vulnerable. They've tried.
One way that Chicago will be bringing in money, though, Sarah, is by putting up another 50 of these speed cameras. So a warning to those of you with a bit of a lead foot. Is this public safety or is this just a blatant money grab?
I think it's very interesting to see Johnson turn to this as a revenue source now. There's kind of a lot of different factors at play in the political calculus, right? On the one hand, you have his constituents, his voters, his more progressive constituents who see, they're concerned about traffic safety, they're concerned about pedestrians, cyclists. They see this as a safety measure. On the other hand, you have a lot of people who see this as a very regressive way to raise money. They say that, and there have been a lot of reports that low-income people, people of color, are disproportionately paying tickets issued by these cameras. So, and then, of course, you have the city's budget issues, the city's financial issues at play here. So all of these are factors that certainly Johnson was weighing as he made this decision. And, what we've seen is that they're moving forward, so
So there we go. Violet, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think it's interesting that he's turning to it now. I mean, this has been, you know, a regular thing that the last four mayoral administrations have turned to, whether it's red light cameras or speed cameras. But Johnson and Vallis both swore them off on the campaign, actually the last debate of the campaign. And so to see him turn towards this pretty solid, steady revenue stream, seemingly, despite the fact that most of the money brought in is from late fees and things like that. And we still don't know the placement. So equity, the question on that is still out.
Well, and it comes, of course, right after the city failed to change the standard speed limit, with some of these very same arguments popping up for it. Now, Quinn, you talked about the mayor not really getting his agenda through, but he is getting some appointment picks through, it seems. He had threatened sort of a purge of anybody who is disloyal, and now we see turnover at the Chicago Park District. Is it part of that, and what can you share about the newly appointed former alderperson who
sure.
will be now heading the park district?
The mayor did make those comments about, you know, if you ain't with us, you got to go. Rosa Escarino was a holdover from the Lightfoot administration. She came in to basically, you know, in some ways clean up the park district after the lifeguard sexual abuse scandal. She had previously worked, was the commissioner at the business affairs department, has a long resume at the city. He's only praised her publicly, but, you know, he is now installing a very close ally, Alderman Carlos Ramirez Rosa, the Logan Square alderman, who is one of the most prominent progressives in Chicago, certainly on the city council. He was the first Democratic socialist to be elected back in 2015 and has definitely sparred and had some tension with mayors and other aldermen. But, you know, I talked to him on the phone today, and he touted some of his accomplishments, making Logan Square, you know, preserving it for people against gentrification and adding different bike lanes and things like that. So he was appointed today and approved by the Park District Board, and that's pretty much it. They're going to negotiate a contract, and he will take over on April 1st from Rosa Escarino. Mayor Johnson will have his first chance to appoint a new alderman. That is now his duty. He's pledging a community-led process. We'll see who that might be. Rumors are kind of looking at Cook County Commissioner Anthony Cazada, who is a close ally, aide to Carlos Ramirez Rosa, but we don't really know yet who could take over the 35th Ward.
A lot to be watching here in terms of what is in that contract, how much Ramirez Rosa will be paid, and then, of course, that pick, as Johnson could very sorely use to have another, at least keep in place, an ally on the city
sure.
council. Moving to another transportation matter, Sarah, back to you. Thank goodness that it was a near miss, credit to the professionalism of the Southwest flight, but how did a Southwest plane have to abort landing in order to avoid a collision with a jet at Midway Airport? What happened?
Yeah, so if you guys have seen the video, which has been widely circulating, it was scary looking, right? A big commercial Southwest jet almost on the ground, wheels very nearly touching down, and then all of a sudden you just see this small business jet kind of poking out in front of it. Southwest plane, immediately pulls back up. So, right, the feds are investigating, the FAA, the NTSB, they're still investigating, but the FAA has already said that business jet was on the runway without authorization. And the NTSB chair has been actually more direct. She said that it appeared that the crew of the business jet didn't listen to air traffic control instructions. So
is how rare, though, is something like this? And given that we have had this sort of stream, it feels like, of frightening incidents, is this a sign of stress in the system or a one-off?
You know, it is. Certainly, the past couple weeks have been a little scary for anyone who has to fly coming up. I took a look at some FAA records related to Midway, and there have been runway kind of incidents in the past where people end up on runways they're not supposed to be on. Planes get too close together, helicopters, vehicles, they all get too close together. It does happen. Certainly, you never want to see something as close as what happened this week. But something, when I talk to some aviation experts, something that they tell me is, they always point out that it wasn't a disaster. And that's kind of a testament to the training that pilots go through, the regulation of the industry, and just kind of how much everybody is trained to handle situations that go awry to try to keep them from getting even worse than they could potentially be.
Anybody planning to fly and feeling okay with
I
that?
Just got back from a trip. It was okay. I was a little nervous.
Thought you were looking tan.
Oh, thank you.
I'm glad everything is okay. Let's talk about some extraordinary scene. This is not quite the same style of footage, but wow, if you watched it play out, President Trump and Vice President Vance meeting with the Ukrainian president and really sort of belittling him, saying that you are not thankful enough. What is your reaction, Violet, to what we saw today play out in the Oval Office?
I mean, it's jarring, you know, but this is kind of, I think, what people were expecting with Trump coming back into office. This is, you know, I mean, obviously it's stepped up, but this has been his kind of style of leadership, I guess you could say, and so
deal making.
Yes, yeah. So I'm not sure that it's entirely shocking to see, but it still is.
And Illinois Congressman Mike Quigley said that Trump is siding with a dictator, Putin, over standing with democracy, saying what just happened in the Oval Office was one of the most embarrassing moments in American history. The world order that was established after the Second World War is dead. Quinn, those are some major statements. I know you covered a vigil earlier this week with Ukrainian Americans and other Chicago residents marking that 3-year anniversary of the war. What do you expect? Because even prior to this meeting, of course, there had been some tensions. What's the reaction?
I mean, there's some irony that it's coming with this anniversary of the invasion. It's such a fraught time for Ukraine. And at the vigil I was at Holy Name Cathedral on Monday night, everyone there was feeling it. And Cardinal Blaise Supich, who's not Ukrainian, but, you know, is the Archbishop of Chicago, he called out Trump pretty much as directly as you can without naming someone. He said, we must stand with the truth. And the truth is that Ukraine is not the aggressor and that Russia is the aggressor. Basically condemned spreading misinformation, like, honestly, our president has done by claiming that Ukraine was the one that started the war. So everyone in that cathedral was scared, angry. I talked to a ton of people who called Trump a bully, who said that they were inspired to come, not just to show faith and show solidarity with their Ukrainian family or friends back in Ukraine, but also to stand up for what they believe is the truth. But it is really a fraught time for Ukraine, and I think today's meeting made it much worse.
Definitely upset, and early reaction from some Republicans is that Zelensky should be more grateful and express that appreciation and gratitude to Trump and to the United States. Now, Violet, over to you, because there was an election this week, or at least a primary, and an embattled but very unabashedly public, praising herself mayor, that is Tiffany Henyard of Dalton, lost. What can you share in terms of how she went so quickly from being a beloved and elected mayor to somebody that voters ousted?
Yeah, so she actually came into the same situation that her now likely successor was coming into. So she accused Riley Rogers, the former mayor, of mismanaging town funds. She was an 8-year trustee. Jason House is coming into this election in the exact same situation, except he ran on the ticket with Henyard in 2021. Obviously, in that time, we've seen the allegations, federal probes, different things like that, and a lot has changed in those 4 years. And so we saw a really strong rebuke of her. 88% of the vote went to Jason House versus 12% for her. But an even bigger takeaway is that voter turnout actually increased. There were 80% more voters in this election than when Henyard won with 82% of the vote in 2021. So not only are we seeing a rebuke of this embattled mayor, but we're also seeing a town that's more involved and sees that they have a role in selecting their, you know, future.
And just in the brief time that we have left, you were there on election night, and did we hear it all from Henyard?
Henyard didn't show up to her own election night party. It was pretty quiet. There was a DJ going, a few people coming in. The food smelled very good. Jason House's election night party had a little bit of a different vibe. It was packed, wall to wall, people shouting, singing, watching the results come in on projector. So, yeah, very, very different vibes on Tuesday.
And Shruti, we have 30 seconds left. left, but wanted to quick give a word to former Illinois Governor Jim Edgar, who announced that he's battling pancreatic cancer. Just briefly, what hallmark did he have on Illinois as he continues to fight this and its finances?
Well, I think there was people always talk about the Edgar ramp for pensions. That's a big one in terms of the fiscal matters. And I think he was also one of the governors that really worked across the aisle. That's one of the things that people have always talked about. Republican governor working with Democrats.
And fiscal stewardship as well. So we do wish our best, of course, to Governor Edgar. With that, we are out of time. Our thanks to Quinn Myers, Shruti Singh, Violet Miller, and Sarah Freistadt. We will be back to wrap things up right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation. Additional support is provided by
And that is our show for this Friday night. From a Quincy Jones tribute to Three Little Birds, check out our website for information on five shows to see this weekend. That's at WTTW.com/news. Now for the Week in Review, I'm Amanda Vinicky. Thanks for watching. Stay healthy and safe. Have a good night and a great weekend, enjoying some of those recommendations from WTTW's newsletter, The Daily Chicagoan. Sarah, now over to you. You also reported on Metra spending more than $1.5 million on an investigation, not releasing the details to the public. So what is this investigating?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, the $1.5 million question. We know it was stemmed by some anonymous complaints against the police department, but that's about it. And Metra's refusing to say anything else. They're refusing to release the results. They're citing attorney-client privilege.
So we don't know. A lot of questions. And of course, Violet, this is as they are searching for money for the state, for all of public transit.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is proud to give back to its community in Chicago and beyond.